Welcome to Agents of Narrative. I'm your host, Damien Gibson. And yeah, this is our first interview episode. I'm super excited to bring it to you guys. It's been a long time coming, trying to get around, well, not around, but waiting for pandemics to ease up and restrictions to disappear. And the whole idea of these interview podcasts is I do them face-to-face and have an actual conversation with someone who is an artist of some description about, well, art, not to sound too wanky about it, you know, how they started, what they're into at the moment, what's rocking their socks off, all that kind of thing. That's maybe the lamest phrase I've ever used in my life. Anyway, as you would have been able to see from the artwork, I spoke to Andrew McClellan, who's a very dear long-term friend, but actually covered some ground where we had not had the conversation prior about how he got into comedy and his extent for his love of comedy. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting conversation. So I'm going to leave the intro there. Just wanted to say thank you for giving it a chance. If you do like it, give us a rating on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars would be great. And let your friends know about it. Follow us on social media. We're Agents of Narrative on all the socials. But let's get to it now. Here's the conversation with Andrew McClellan. Here we go.
Yeah. Andrew, welcome to Agents of Narrative.
It's a pleasure on my behalf and on behalf of the viewers, listeners.
And viewers and listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
This is also a video podcast. Surprise.
Wow. I don't know why you set up the camera in my home.
I've got a very small production team. I've got some questions. This is a bit weird because we've known each other for a really long time. And I have interviewed you for a podcast before, but it was all about beer.
Strange
kind of conversation.
Yeah, your old Cool Room podcast.
Do you find this weird? Someone just, a friend of yours, interviewing you?
No, not at all. No, it's nice. It's pleasant.
Yeah.
It's one of those rare occasions where you just get to talk about yourself, which is an amazing and rare treat.
That's
if we were having a normal conversation, I couldn't talk about myself the whole time. I'd have to let you do a little. Seeing as I'm being interviewed, I get to go hog wild.
A tiny bit. I get a tiny bit. I get the last 2 minutes of our conversation.
No, you're saying you're going to do the outro without me?
No. I'm saying in real life, we talk usually 3 to 7 hours.
Yeah.
And then you give me the last 5 minutes.
Exactly. To wrap up.
Things are really good. Kelly's good. That's good. Anyway, I gotta go. I don't know if I've ever actually asked you about this, but how did you get into comedy? Because I know that you really love music. I mean, you're obsessed with music, maybe even more than I am. Like, it's one of your big loves.
Mm.
But why was it comedy, sketch comedy and stand-up comedy that you gravitated towards rather than learning how to play guitar and forming a band?
Yeah. Well, firstly, playing guitar is a lot harder. It takes a lot of effort. You got to practice.
Then being
your fingers start to hurt. You know, you get calluses. Ouch. but I still have dreams one of these days. No, I got into comedy because, you know, it's a cliched route. When I was a kid, I got bullied a lot. Didn't like it, obviously. And I was very, very shy. And my mother forced me to do drama classes at Box Hill TAFE when I was 15.
Wow.
And I begged her not to make me, but, you know, she was like, you got to get out of your shell a bit. So I did that. And then
What was that like? Was that on the weekends? So you had to go to school and then on Saturday morning or something?
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And I'd go over to that. And I really didn't want to do it. But then as soon as I did it, I just completely loved it, found my people.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful. And it got me out of my shell. And then I thought I wanted to be an actor. Because doing drama and stuff.
Right.
But then, you know, once I'd sort of done some plays and stuff, I realized I don't want to be an actor. I want to be an entertainer. I want fun. I want joy. I want to bring fun and joy and dance around and sing silly songs and, you know, get laughs. And that's probably something to do with ego or conceit as well. I don't know. But an actor wants the same thing, but they just occasionally want to make the audience cry. I felt no great need to do that. So, yeah, it was when I got to uni and I did a few plays again as well. But then I started an improv group because improv is the easiest form of comedy of all, like theatre sports and all that. Because once you get over the initial fear, of making stuff up off the top of your head in front of an audience, it's easy once you get over that and really fun. So I was doing improv at high school, then I went to uni and I started an improv group with my old friend Lawrence Leung, who's a couple of years older than me, but still one of my dearest friends. Mm. And then we everyone in the improv group, there was eight of us, all said we'd all start doing stand-up. Like, we'd all have a gig, see what it's like.
Right.
And encouraged each other. Then got stand-up, really enjoyed it. And yes, that's it.
And that was the Anarchists? Was that the Anarchist Guild?
No, that different... group was in Prozac. Anarchist Guild came along years later. That was the sketch group.
Right.
Although Nick Kaday and Adam McKenzie, who were in Prozac, were also in the Anarchist Guild.
Do you think maybe there was... It was more enticing because there's more control in doing entertainment-type stuff, like improv and stand-up comedy? Like, you get to write your own... Like, were you interested in writing your own stuff and being in control of that?
Totally.
Rather than having to perform other people's words and stories?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It can be scary performing other people's words and stories because you worry you might let them down.
Hmm.
You might not do it, you know, the way they dreamed. And if you write your own stuff, you can do it the way you want.
Yeah.
Within reason. I mean, I could never put on the giant Polyphonic Spree-esque shows I wanted to because I couldn't afford it. But I do have a number of shows in my back pocket, which is like, if somebody threw $1 million at me to put on a show, I would do these two shows. I've got definitely two that would be massive productions. I don't know if they'd be massive successes. Yeah. But you know.
Do you want to talk about those? Or are you going to
keep them? Sure, yeah. So the in Comedy Festival last year and this year coming, I'm doing The Very Model of a Modern Major Musical, which is a contemporary Gilbert and Sullivan, because I love Gilbert and Sullivan. It's just dumb fun. Again, it's all entertainment. And I wrote, the one I'm doing Comedy Festival is a stripped down hour version. But I actually wrote the full musical, which goes for 2.5 hours. It's got 2 full choruses, 8 lead roles. Like, you know, I would need an orchestra. So that's one thing I'd just love to do, but never will, because nobody's making shows like that anymore. Yeah. And then I wrote a silent movie show years ago called Tie Her to the Tracks, which is playing on all those cliches of ancient silent movies. You know, guy in a top hat ties people to railway tracks and... It was really fun. I was really proud of it. The cast was amazing. It's a cast now that if I had the show, it would sell. But of course, we only had like 20 people in a night. That's Sammy Jay, Celia Piccola, Adam McKenzie again. And that show was so much fun. Asher Trelevin, who's like in Vegas, does shows in Vegas and is quite big over there. But I also came up with a version that was like massive scale with big stunts, but all live. You know, like a big Lana and Woodley show or something.
Yeah.
So I'd love to make that.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it'd be great to do, but needs lots of money. And stunt coordinators and, you know, all the safety stuff and harnesses and everything. So we just did our little one where I'd be doing forward rolls and hurting my back. Stuff like that. Luckily, Asher Trelle was properly a physical star, so he could really do it. He was a circus guy. Yeah.
When you moved from doing drama classes and started doing improv at university, what was, like, were you into comedy? Like, were you a comedy nerd or was it just something you're a naturally funny guy.
Mm.
So was it just like, well, I'm funny, so I'll try this? Or was it like, I love Rick Mayall, I want to be Rick Mayall?
Yeah, no, it wasn't that. I was never a comedy nerd. I like comedy and I watch quite a bit of it, but... I'm into it only slightly more than the average person and not as much as a comedy nerd, I'd say. Right. In fact, I don't watch too much of it now. Part of that is not wanting to be influenced by anyone else.
Right.
Because when you're young, you can't help but be influenced by other people's styles. And part of it's just when you're in the live comedy world, you see plenty of comedy. So when you get home, you don't necessarily want to watch a stand-up special.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But when you first started, it wasn't a thing of like... Like, for me, for example, when I first started playing in bands, all I wanted to do was be a Beatle or Oasis. Like
it was just like,
that was the roadmap of, well, I get one of those haircuts and I learn how to play guitar and, you know, I'll be famous. But it wasn't necessarily like that. It was just the pure love of, of performing and entertaining.
Yes. And always at the back of your mind, there's a thing of, oh, you know, maybe something will come of this. That would be nice. But no, I just kept going. And enjoying it. And perhaps foolishly, you know, it's the whole thing. I'm still doing it now. I'm not a massive star. You know, I've done some TV and stuff over the years, but never But then there's the DJing that I fell into. If I wasn't a DJ, which is the other thing, I mean, you know this, but I just sort of, I love music so much. And one day I got asked to DJ at a club and I thought, oh yeah, this is all right. And then it just turned out I was good at it, which is very nice for me. So that makes me want, you know, just playing weddings and stuff, which is a form of entertaining as well, because that's all just, again, about wanting people to have a good time.
Well,
and
especially
want to provide
the way
that.
You do it. I mean, you get people involved, you dance around.
Yeah.
It's, you are performing when you DJ.
Yes.
Most people do not do that.
No, that's true. That's true. But there's a lot to be said for performing when you DJ.
Oh, absolutely. I will take you over the guy who just stands there and occasionally taps at his laptop, puts his headphone up to his ear and then just stands there sipping a beer.
Yeah, true. I'm the live experience. They're the they're the recorded music experience. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So I'll never be able to create music like that. Anyway, yeah, it's all entertainment. I don't know. There was a point that was coming earlier. So the DJing, yeah, that makes money. So if I didn't have that, I would have to just go and work it, you know, wherever it would have me these days. And I don't know who that is.
Yeah.
Go back to Kmart.
Well, I think that's just the arts full stop.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, I'm very lucky I diversified.
Yeah, but I'm doing two courses at the moment. One is teaching and one is writing. And I'm doing the teaching one so I can support the goal of trying to write.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. It's not, I can't walk out of this writing degree and walk straight into a journalism job or whatever the case may be.
Totally.
It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Anymore. So.
Oh, yes. And speaking of that, having the dream of, you know, like maybe one day the comedy will be something, I have not entirely, I suppose, still at the back of my mind, but I've pretty much given up on that because you can't make that your goal. Mm. Otherwise, you'll be frustrated forever and disappointed. And I think, as we've seen, even those people who do make it, they're not necessarily happy.
No.
Yeah.
No.
So, yeah, I've just got to be happy with what I do. And I think I am. It's really nice.
Yeah.
Although I have, you know, it was years ago now, but I remember looking up a list of going, at what is the latest age where people have made it in the arts?
I have done this.
Oh, look, Liam Neeson, who we think of as a big star, wasn't in anything big until he was like 35. Mm. And at that point, you're 33. You're like, I can still do it. But then when you're 41, you're just like,
What are you listening to at the moment?
As always, lots of Decemberists and Mountain Goats, who are my favourite, who keep releasing stuff. Lots of country music right now.
Country music?
Yeah, really trad country music.
Yeah.
From the 20s and 30s and 40s, just because it's nice and speedy. But
you mean speedy as far as tempo of music?
Yes.
Speedy?
Yeah, it's kind of poppy and fun and pretty joyous, that kind of stuff.
What kind of... Country music.
Maddox Brothers and Rose, I've just been listening to, which is Okie music.
Right.
Which is people who came out of the Oklahoma diaspora, you know, the Grapes of Wrath and so on is about.
Yeah.
So it's early stuff. And I got into them because I was into a podcast about Wanda Jackson, the great early rock and roll star.
Yeah.
And she was talking about how she used to listen to Maddox Rose and then I played a clip and then I'm like, that's great. So I'll give that a go.
Yeah.
And as usual, a bit of indie folk and, you know, pleasant stuff like that. But then also, I've been listening to lots of podcasts and things like that and audiobooks, but I want to pull back from that because I just want to, I'm not listening to enough new music. I listened to the chart yesterday as well to get an idea.
Yeah, you do this quite a bit. Like you'll dip your toe into...
To the ARIA charts just to see what's what. Yeah. But, you know, it's often, like at the moment, it's a new Adele song, which is, to me, sounds like most Adele songs.
Mm.
Up next, you got, what is it, that Dua Lipa Elton John one? So that just takes an Elton John chorus and chucks in a vaguely contemporary setting. After that, it's Ed Sheeran and someone, you know, it's...
Yeah.
But then there will be something in the charts that, there will be things that are good, no matter what.
Yeah.
Some. And there will be things that come into the charts for 1 week and then drop off. But if you're lucky enough to catch it, they're good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like, because I was about to say, like, even, you know, I feel like even pop music was better when we were younger. Like, even, you know,
like
New Kids on the Block or whatever. Not that I really listened to any of that, but if I listen to that now compared to stuff, but I'm just not listening to stuff, pop stuff now.
Yeah.
So I'm talking out of my arse.
it's
well, I think that's like a real problem. Like, I definitely see that in comedy, in all art forms of the arts, actually. People who are older saying, they don't make anything like that anymore. They do. You just, it's just not at the top of that field anymore because it's old school.
Hmm.
And there are artists who are releasing, if you want, you know, stuff that's like Bob Dylan. And there are comedians who are doing stuff like Monty Python, if you want it, and you can search it and find it, but you won't, because you'll just go back to Bob Dylan and Monty Python.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same with you, man. You got to be like, there are definitely bands that are Britpop-esque that are coming out now. But it's not the same, because when you were young listening to Britpop, you could jump on that train with some friends as well, and you could be like, this band's great, and we're young, and we're doing it together.
Yeah.
Now, if you find a band that sounds a lot like, I don't know, the Bluetones, you'll be like, yeah, this is great, but you're the only one who's into it. You don't know anyone else. That band almost certainly isn't going to tour, and it's not part of a movement that people are excited about.
Yeah, that's true.
So you don't have all that stuff around it.
Yeah, because I felt like, you know, I in the last sort of 4 or 5 years, I've really got into the Arctic Monkeys sort of 5 or 10 years after
they
hit, right?
Mm.
And it's been a completely solitary experience because we're not going out to clubs or anything. Like, I'm not meeting anyone who's into the Arctic Monkeys.
Oh, well, I still go out to clubs. And if you went to clubs, if you went to any clubs, they play it.
I'm not. Yeah, no, I get that. But I'm just saying, like, you know, our friendship group aren't doing that.
Yeah.
And you can send a Spotify link to someone, and sometimes people listen to it. Sometimes they'll come back and go, yeah, that's great.
Mm.
But that'll be it. It Very doesn't true. Really, you know, sometimes, I mean, there's been a couple of bands that friends and I have connected over through that way. Like Idols is one with a couple of mates and stuff like that. But it just doesn't have it. I feel like the internet helps you find, for me personally, helps me find a lot more art that I'm really into. But it's a much more solitary
Much more solitary journey.
Yeah.
And one that peters out as well, because I certainly have thoughts of, oh, 2 years ago I found an Australian band who were quite Britpop-ish and I really liked them and I can't remember what they're called and I've no idea.
Right.
Whereas in the past, you would have bought the album at the time,
looked
at it, read the liner notes, all that stuff.
Or written it down or...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking...
Maybe it just takes more work now.
Yeah.
But the field's wide open.
I remember I was thinking about this the other day. I was going to message you about it. I bought Bittersweet Symphony, the single, CD single, on the strength of Noel Gallagher mentioning it in an interview that was in Beat or in Press or something.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the question, you know, was some throwaway question, like, you know, like, what's the best song on, you know, in England at the moment? He was like, yeah, The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't listen to it. I didn't ask to listen to it. I just stormed into JB Hi-Fi.
Spent
$7.99. I mean, it's an amazing song. Like, if I was going to do that with any single. Like,
yeah.
And I never really got into another Verve song like that.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, oh, man, I just don't know. I mean, I could have that experience now. Like, I could quite easily go and do that if I wanted to, but it just wouldn't have the same...
Well, the way you do it now is you just, you know, look it up on your Spotify or whatever.
Well, that's...
And so you wouldn't listen to it nearly as often, because when you spent $7.99 on a single, you'd play it a lot. You were getting your money's worth.
And also you had no money.
Yeah.
You're 17, 18 years old. It's like $8 is a huge investment.
Yep. I used to work 6 hours at Kmart for every album I bought, and I knew it, and I'd done the maths. Yeah. Whereas now, if I don't know what, but then I would have spent the money on something else, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, of course. You're young. You'll find stuff to spend your money on.
Yeah.
You in your in most of your comedy shows, it's always sort of based around subjects that you really like, whether it's pirates or the mixtape show or the Gilbert and Sullivan show that you've just done recently. Is that just out of, what's the thought process behind that? Rather than just sort of getting up and doing, you know, sort of observational stand-up, is it easier for you to write about that stuff?
Yeah, it's easier to write to a topic always.
Yeah.
Than just saying, I'll just write something. I've written observational comedy, and it's perfectly fine, and some I'm proud of, but I don't know. I love GNS. No one else has written a show about Gilbert and Sullivan. Yeah. Why don't I just do it? No one else has done this. I think it's a good idea.
That was a great show.
Oh, cheers, mate. Yeah, but it's just fun, and it's easier to write to a theme.
Hmm.
You can get inspired more easily. Oh, I've got to cover this. I've got to cover that. Yeah, yeah. I mean, even I did that show, The Seated Walking Tour of Western Europe, you know, yeah, traveling around Europe. That was really fun. And that came from an idea of, oh, there's Google Street View and you can kind of walk down streets and oh, this is nice. Yeah. It's turned out to be the perfect pandemic show because people want to virtually tour Europe in the pandemic. But even that's so wide open. You're like, I could have written 40 series of 10 episodes for that, you know, just doing different towns. It's so hard to do all of Europe in 1 hour.
I loved it. I really, you know, I mean, it's out. I did. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved that. I loved the Gilbert and Sullivan show. If I'm being really honest, I was a bit worried traveling in because I was like more about myself of like, I don't know anything about Gilbert. Mm. I don't know. I feel like I have fairly good general knowledge about most things. It's like, I don't know anything about Gilbert and Sullivan besides the fact that my nana loved them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's all I really knew. But it didn't matter because the show was so well written.
Oh, cheers,
and
mate.
Of course you were going to write a show that didn't rely on everyone to have an intimate insider knowledge.
No, it's about entertainment.
Yeah, of course.
That's the thing. It's a comedy show. And I'm striving always to do what it says on the tin. I don't want to, you know, have any great emotional insight. I mean, definitely we'll joke about the fact that GNS, you know, is full of just sexist tropes and colonialist stuff as well. And I'll chuck some gags in about that. But I'm not going to harp on it and, you know, have the lights go down low so I can say, of course, William Schwenk Gilbert was known to be, I don't know, anti-Semitic or something. Yeah, like, yeah. And actually he wasn't, so luckily. But yeah, it's entertainment. You can address those things without,
yeah, without it having to be the dramatic last 10 minutes of the show.
That said, there are tons of comedy shows that do have that dramatic last 10 minutes.
Hmm.
And they're amazing.
Yeah.
And they have more of an emotional punch than mine. And, you know, I have nothing against that style. But I'm an entertainer. Yeah,
just make people laugh, man. I think it's nice. There are times where I go to comedy shows and that happens at the end. You walk out all ashen face. You know? You're like, oh, man, I don't want to think about how horrible it is to be... I mean, like how horrible men are on the way home tonight.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about myself and do work on myself tonight.
Oh, the worst.
It's the worst, man. Lunch Tunes is something that you've been doing throughout the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Twitch channel where you've been DJing. You want to talk? We can talk about this.
Do you want me to talk about it, Damien?
I wonder about... because we've spoken about it, I just was worried about the... Can you get in trouble for DJing on Twitch? Is that...
Yes. Right. It's technically not legal.
Yeah, right. But Twitch seem to be turning a blind eye to it.
They are turning a blind eye to it. Right. So even like someone like... I know that people have gotten takedown messages. Just for the listeners' edification, you're not meant to DJ music online and you can't get a license to do it, which is very frustrating either, because, you know, if you DJ at a pub or a club, you get a license to do that, but you can't really get one for streaming, which, you know, was a real problem and remains a particular problem now. The pandemic obviously put that in stark relief.
Yeah.
But Twitch don't enforce it whereas Facebook, and I kind of even don't want to talk about, I mean, it's not like this is a giant platform. No offense. If you were Joe Rogan, I wouldn't talk about this only because I don't want Twitch to go, you know, or the music companies go, we really should crack down on that.
Hmm.
But yes.
Well, that's not why I brought it up. I wanted to know what you've loved about it or like what has the experience
been like? The community's amazing. I wouldn't do it if I didn't have the regulars there that I love, and it's nice when new people come along. But yes, it's just something regular do every day. It's work to do every day, so I'm not like in bed just like, what will I do today?
Yeah.
Because there's long bits of the pandemic where, you know, maybe you can motivate yourself to write a new show or something, but you don't have a new idea you're passionate about or whatever. It was something to do, and but more than that, it was fun, it was a beautiful community, it was a reason to listen to new music and be introduced to new music by people making requests, and yeah, really nice, really nice.
What is it that you love about Gilbert and Sullivan music? Can you explain that to me?
GNS is pure comedy.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Although there are emotional, Arthur Sullivan, who wrote the music, wanted to write serious opera. And William Schwenk Gilbert, who wrote the words, just was happy to write comedy.
Right.
So there are serious songs in it, which generally I, you know, aren't mad for. But the rest of it's just all gags, stupid gags, and very like 19th century British. It's gentle. It's a sweet world. No one ever gets killed. The villains aren't really evil normally. They just kind of want to, they love the person that, you know, they're not meant to be with.
Mm, yeah. It's sort of romantic, farcical stuff.
It's yeah, it's exactly what it is. So it's really simple and nice, and the tunes are cracking. Yeah, so I really love it. Without thinking it's all great, you know, there's five good ones, there's five mediocre ones, there's a couple that I've never even listened to that people say you shouldn't bother.
Was it a, were people in your family into it? Like your parents? Oh,
yeah.
Or?
Yeah, my parents were into it. I think everyone in my family's been in one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Wow.
So that, but we all like to, you know, mess about and perform and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know. When we were kids growing up, we had a rule, no singing at the table, because the kids were always singing. And my parents would play it like we were on long car drives driving to, you know, Sydney or whatever.
Yeah, right.
They'd play it in the car. Everyone got a cassette. So mum and dad would put on stuff like Gene S. My sister would put on Andrew Lloyd Webber musicals. Yeah. My brother would put on The Smiths and The Cure.
Yeah, my mum and sister would do that a lot. They had a lot of musical, not The Smiths and Cure, but they were, yeah, they were. There was always some musical that they were both into, and Dad wasn't really around, so it was the three of us going on trips, and yeah, the girls would get, they would just commandeer the stereo.
Yeah.
So I think I got a Sony Walkman when I was 10. Sweet. And it was legitimately the greatest day of my life.
Yeah.
But then I instantaneously became like a teenager, like a sullen teenager.
Headphones on,
sitting
in the corner,
back with the headphones on, like stereotypical. But then listening to like Crowded House.
Yeah, of course, which you thought was really cool.
I thought Crowded House were the coolest.
Well, they are cool. They're a good band.
No, I don't know about cool.
Yeah, whilst your mum and sister are going, Master of the House, get your bed.
That's exactly what it was. It was Les Miserables. I didn't mind Les Miserables. That would be the time where I'd take my, you know, very quietly take my headphones off and be like, this is all right.
Yeah, Les Miserables
is all right. But Phantom of the Opera and like Calamity Jane.
I love Calamity Jane.
I used to see that all the time. I know every song in that musical, but I don't know. I think I've sat down and watched the film once.
Oh, it's fun. Doris Day's great.
Maybe. It is, like, I have watched it as an adult, and it is a really good film.
Yeah.
But it's given me this weird, like, aversion to musicals.
Oh, right.
Well, I think I have an aversion to musicals, and then I see one that I really, like, I watched Hamilton, loved it.
Mm.
But, I don't know. I have this thing of, like, someone will say, oh, it's a musical. I'm like,
yeah, fair enough.
I don't know why. Because I love music, so I should.
There's something deeply uncool about musicals as well.
What
you know,
I find
which is incorrect.
Yeah,
people don't like them, you know, because they're like, "Oh, people don't burst into song in real life."
That's my thing. That's what I can't.
You know, superheroes don't turn up with giant hammers in real life either. And yet,
I don't like superheroes. I don't know what you're talking about. Shut up. I'm a cool podcast host.
If all art was just about what happened in real life, we'd all be further depressed.
Yeah, I know. I know that. But for some reason, musicals, I've got that stereotypical bogan
and
macho attitude towards it.
G&S have that weird British 19th century, you know, thing.
I like that. I find that funny. What is something that you find utterly frustrating and annoying that everybody else just doesn't think is a big problem?
Oh, gosh. That's a big question, because now I'm thinking about, you know, art and politics and science.
It doesn't even have to be that. I'm constantly bitching about little things that happen on public transport.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Constantly. And I'm starting to realise it's a real problem and it turns people off.
Yeah. I mean, during the pando, definitely, like, all the mask stuff, I'd be walking around with my mask on, not enjoying it. Of course you're not enjoying it, but you're doing it. And then you see people wondering about, you know, with the mask off. And like, I know you're going under the rule that technically you're exercising, but you're not exercising. To the point where I found I had to, like, just turn that bit of my brain off or I'd be frustrated all the time. Yeah, so stuff like that. But then I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of us find that frustrating. What I find frustrating, people, bookshops that also sell records that display records in their front window, and then they're in the sun and you can tell that they're being destroyed
as
you watch. There's something frustrating.
Mm.
What else?
Like, what my thing is ordering a latte that's meant to be at a certain temperature, but then I always get upset that it's not hot enough.
Oh.
And then people in my life, like Callie or my sister or whatever, will be like, that's the temperature it's meant to be, and then I'll still sulk
every time. Apparently that's an old person's order. Apparently, if you say, I want a latte extra hot, extra that's what old people
I know,
say.
I know this, but I can't help myself.
Why do you want your drink to be so hot? What if you scald your tongue?
Because it lasts longer. I can enjoy the taste of the coffee because then it doesn't get super cold super quickly. You know what? I only drink half of it.
This may frustrate you. I'm not into the temperature of drinks. Doesn't really concern me. You know how people like...
Really?
You know, they want a Coke to be cold. I can drink warm Coke. What difference does it make?
Warm Coke?
That makes no difference. I mean, not hot. I don't want it in the microwave. But I'm talking
piping cup with Coca-Cola.
You know, once I performed at the Warburton Winterfest, which is a little sort of, they had a comedy night.
Yeah.
And Warburton's a very nice town at the foot of the mountains. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
And it was cold though, it's winter. And I went to a Polish restaurant there and they're like, do you want this special drink? It's warm Polish winter beer. And I was like, yeah, I'm intrigued by that. I'll have that. And then she literally said, great, I'll put the VB in the microwave now. I don't know if she was joking, but it was awful. Absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But anyway, but my point is, so, like, I can drink coffee that's at room temperature. I can get Coke that's at room temperature. Mm-hmm. I would prefer it to be warm and cold with the way that they're meant to be.
Yeah.
But that doesn't concern me that much.
I found myself on the way here. I sat down at the train station. And a guy came and sat down next to me and lit up a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been more offended in my life.
Really? Why?
And I smoked for 20
you
years.
Smoked
I was a scumbag smoker. I would have done the exact same thing.
Yeah, right.
And I've only really been a non-smoker for like a year and a half, 2 years. Even then, I still
partake. Yeah, yeah.
But for some reason today, I was just an enraged... like right-wing talkback caller.
Gosh. Well, you know what, then? I think what annoys me most, that maybe doesn't annoy a lot of people, but I really try to keep on the lookout for in my life, is hypocrisy, as in not being a hypocrite myself. And I see so much of it in life, you being annoyed at someone for smoking at a train. I mean, it was outside, right?
It was outside. I didn't say anything. I was just on the inside, like...
Yeah, I mean, technically you're not meant to, and I also agree you got to follow the rules. But if it was something that you would do yourself, or even would have done just a year and a half ago.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
I hated myself for it.
But if you were a smoker who followed the rules steadily and would have never smoked at a train station when you weren't allowed to, maybe you have the right.
Then you can.
Yeah.
Then you can judge people. It's
very specific rules here. But it does annoy me when people are like, oh, how could that person do that? About something that I know they've done in the past. And it's like, just have a little introspection. How could they do it? Because you could do it, you know?
Yeah. It's something I really have tried to work hard on, especially during the lockdown and stuff, because it's been so easy to judge other people.
Yeah.
And then just trying to come at it, you know, like, because there's people were making decisions that were legitimately affecting you and your own health, you know, and so it was very hard not to get emotive about that. But I'm at a point now with vaccination rates where they are, where it's like, okay.
Well, you're at my house.
You could do whatever.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wild.
I think that's the key to happiness, is just being able to just walk past things and not let it affect you.
Yeah, maybe. You know? And I'm glad it doesn't affect you much, like, and you're not worried, because I did spit in your glass of water before I gave it to you.
No, that's
just for a little bit of
delicious.
COVID fun. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's the new blood brother. Thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You spit in each other's drinks and now you're brothers forever.
Forever.
If I had a gun to your head.
Oh, God!
And there were, it takes a turn.
Yeah.
There were four Beatles in the room alive.
Oh, this is the worst question.
You can only keep one of them alive. Who would you choose?
Oh! You know what? You can remove the gun from my head from this equation. And just say, if there were four Beatles and, you know, the others had to die, one of them had to live.
Yeah.
I don't need a gun to my head.
No, a gun's to your head as well. And it's me holding it.
All right, all right. And so is the threat that if I don't pick one, I will die?
Yes. So you got to pick one.
Well, no, I don't have to. I could still choose to sacrifice myself for the sake of the two people that are alive. God damn
it, you found a loophole. No, but all four of them are alive.
Let's just put it like this. All four Beatles are alive. There's no gun at my head.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to pick one to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't pick one, they all die.
Yes.
So therefore, I have to pick one. And you don't have to put a gun to my head, which is an idea that you have frankly become obsessed with.
No, the gun's still at you.
Anyway, or let's put this question yet another way.
Who's
your favourite Beatle? Huh? You could have asked that question.
That's boring. I want you to kill the other three.
I have to kill them. All right, so there's a gun to my head. And I have a gun in my hand.
You got a button for each one.
Oh, button.
And if you press the button, they live.
Here's what I might do.
The other three go down a chute into a big into a big giant.
In this case, I work out a scheme. Kiln. Really take my time and I work out a scheme of tricking you to go, like, oh, I pressed the button, it didn't work properly. Maybe you want to step over on that podium and have a quick look. And then I press the button.
So which button are you pressing?
Well, if you're the one with the gun to my head, the one that you're on at that point. No, okay. Who is my favourite Beatle? Is that the question?
Yeah, fine. Fine.
It's a good question, as always, but I think I'm going to have to go with what I'm pretty sure your answer is as well, and say Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like them all. They've all got their little quirks.
It is hard to choose.
The good stuff.
Why Paul?
Why Paul? Because he's nice.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, he's a great songwriter. He's a charming fella, and he seems a lot nicer than John.
Yeah.
And if you've got to pick, you know, and I like George and Ringo, but if we're talking about the real song factories,
yeah,
obviously,
yeah,
it's John and Paul.
What happens if Paul passes away and just this flood of information comes out about him that he was just the worst human? Oh,
then I'll feel guilty, and I'll ask you to delete this episode.
I absolutely will. All right. We're getting close to wrapping up. I just want to ask this. What's the nerdiest thing that you're into that no one else gets at the moment?
Oh, that's a good one. Well, like, right now it's probably country music from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
You know, and I discovered there's a difference between country music and Western music.
Oh, really?
The old Blues Brothers joke. We are both kinds, country and Western.
What is the difference?
A difference is that Western music has percussion.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really?
And trad country is just like violin and stuff
Wow.
No drums.
So essentially all country music we've heard is Western music.
Yeah, I guess so. Like the contemporary stuff is, to the point where the Grand Ole Opry, way back in its early days, you know, the great country music TV show, didn't have a drum kit or anything. And wouldn't get one. Like, brought one in first in the 60s or something.
Yeah, 1978 was the first time. It's a big revolution here at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah.
Tonight we've got a drummer on the stage.
I mean, there's a few musical artists where I am one of 18 people who've subscribed to them on Spotify.
Yeah, wow.
Like Hartley Goldstein, Just Jones is pretty low. But... yeah, I don't know. But something particularly nerdy? Oh, that no one else I know is into is War Thunder, the World War II vehicular computer game I'm addicted to. But that is pure, like, dopamine addiction. Whenever I, you know, destroy another tank, a little bit in my brain goes, bling, correct, well done. So I've got to get over that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I love They Might Be Giants, but then a lot of people do.
But the people in your life... don't? Is there something
Just society as a whole, you know. I don't really have hits. I don't know, man. What else? Yeah. Pipe tobacco I was into for quite a while, but I'm trying to very much cut back on that. In fact, I've essentially cut it out of my life. But yeah, pipe tobacco is pretty niche and nerdy.
It is.
And terrible for you.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah.
I think 30s, 40s country and Western music is...
might be it.
...pretty niche. I don't know if I'm going to... I don't know if anyone will beat that.
On pipe tobacco, I do want to say, as much as, you know, don't get into it. It's bad for you. Here's a little fact. Blow your mind, mate. Blow your bloody mind.
Yeah.
Not only do people who smoke pipes live longer than people who smoke cigarettes, have less disease, they have less disease than people who don't smoke at all. What?
What?
Yeah, almost certainly because it's quite an expensive hobby. So
right, okay.
With good healthcare. That's my part.
There's like three people.
Lord Cheltington! Ah! Feel free to fill up your pipe.
Well, that's... man, I'm done. We can pretty much wrap that up.
I don't want to finish on the note of you should take up pipe tobacco because it's good for you.
No, that's where we're leaving it. Where can people find you? Do you have things happening?
Comedy. I'll be in Perth doing a seated walking tour of Western Europe in early February. In late February, I'll be performing the very model of a modern major musical in Adelaide for a week, and then and then in Comedy Festival too.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Perth Fringe, Adelaide Fringe, and Melbourne Comedy Festival. Yeah, and then I'm on Lunch Tunes still most days on Twitch, twitch.tv/DJAndrewMcClelland, you know, Instagram, I've got a website,
Twitter, Facebook,
it's never updated, all but that stuff. Yeah, and the gigs I mainly keep updated on my Facebook.
Cool, man. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's
been such a long time coming. I think I asked you in May.
Yeah.
Or something like that, and it's now pretty much November. So
yeah.
Thank you so much for doing it. I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, my pleasure, mate. Thanks for asking me.
Oh, of course.